Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Darren, stranded here on this barren planet with my two strandees, Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue. Daniel and Philip, another week, another Star Trek. What wittyisms do you have for me? Choose your wittyisms.
Okay, I mean, I'm pointing at Daniel, but just for the record, I'm not wearing these sunglasses because I have a hangover. It's just that the binary system around City Alpha 3, it's like really bright, guys. And look, I am a redhead and I can't go into the sun, so I'm just going to stay out of the light. And I have sunglasses, and I know I have other sunglasses on my head. You can't be too careful.
Well, you have that sun protection balm, which you keep with you at all
Always
times.
Always wear Heaven your sun protection.
You would ever drop that at an inopportune moment. What about you, Daniel?
You know what I was going to say?
Who are you pointing at?
I know we had that, you know, run in with the cargo crate in the cargo bay last week, Darren, and I found out that I was going to be the recipient of your last will and testament, and you were going to give me your most important possession as both a metaphor and a learning tool for me.
His droid puppet?
I gotta let you know, I re-gifted the hell out of it, and I just gave it to the next person who was in line.
You re-gifted?
So, like a week later. It doesn't even matter to me,
man,
that this was...
You didn't even open it.
Yeah,
I just saw K3 on eBay.
I just gave it away because apparently it doesn't mean anything at this point, so... You know, you can take from that what you will, Darren. But
you are my pain, Daniel. You are my pain.
But he's the pain you
I can't
chose,
believe
right?
you regifted. It is. Well, we have another member here joining us today. We have Grace joining us all the way through transmissions. I don't know if she's spore-drived over here. I don't know about the ethical implications of that, but she's here.
She strikes me as a survivor. Excited.
Believe it or not, I actually was carried here on a wave of space tardigrades.
Wow.
Oh,
wait.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow.
Man, that sounds like the eco way to go.
Well, also,
okay,
since
I like
this
that.
Is all no. by, you're all taking this via my word, that's totally what happened. To all
That's
of
true.
Our
yeah.
listeners.
Oh, I mean, yes. Yeah,
look,
no,
this,
I totally buy
we're Starfleet.
It.
We are a discerning group that accepts all cultures and is friendly towards everyone, as Discovery often shows.
We come in peace, as we often
we
say.
We come in peace, you'll leave in pieces.
Ooh.
Well, today we are going to be talking about Discovery Episode 5, Choose Your Pain.
Which, by the way,
pain,
that was the worst
you know.
Book series when I was a kid. I mean, man, you died at every choice. Like, it wasn't even fun.
Yeah.
But. And the paper cuts, it's like they wanted you to cut your fingers on those
pages.
It
was right up there with the Magic Slaughter Treehouse series. Ay, that's
the Chainsawers Club. It was not...
So, guys, we are 5 episodes in to Star Trek. We are a third of the way through this season already. And I've heard some people saying it's the most Star Trek episode, but they kind of say that about every episode, so I don't really know what that means anymore. But we have a lot to talk about. Let's start with... this is just an effing cool
yeah.
episode.
Language. Language.
Wait, did you just
Whoa,
language?
I understood that reference because it came from the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, I'll start. Cool, man. I say it's about time.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, don't get hung up about this sort of thing. I see that there seems to be a bit of a divide on it. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a Star Trek, you know what, I don't think in the future these kinds of things are going to matter or be important. So I say the language... The way that they used the language in this episode worked for what they were going for, and honestly, it's no big thing.
I don't know. I'll be the that guy, I guess. I don't know. This is how I think it. And Darren, you're the one with actual children, so you can just actually comment.
Who are not actually watching Star Trek Discovery rated M.
What is wrong
certainly not
with
this
you?
Episode.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing. And again, maybe I'm just, you know, colorfuling my background. It's all about me, blah, blah, blah. But look, I remember watching Star Trek when I was 9, okay? Obviously, that was not TVMA-TNG, which, by the way, stands for something. I don't know what that stands for. But anyway, but
mature audience.
But yeah, I mean, just like F-bombs, like if I was a parent, I'm like, you know, pre-screening this for my kids, which I know would be a helicopter thing to do, but whatever. I'm like, okay, well, they're not watching this scene, or, you know, of course, there's probably half the scenes in Discovery of people stomping on heads and stabbing the hell out of people and all sorts of rape implications. You know, there's like, this was not the, you know, this is very, well, not very TVMA, but enough. So, I mean, that's my only thing about, oftentimes, I'm not going on a rant here, I promise, but oftentimes nerd culture is now just adult. Like, you know, comic books are now for adults, they're not for kids, you know, and so, which is a shame, because, I mean, that's how I got into things when I was a kid. So, that's my point of view there.
Yeah, I was gonna say, just with, you know, having actual kids, I mean, I already decided that, I mean, I've watched some Next Gen with Lizzie, and I've watched some TOS. She actually, the animated series is great. You can pretty much do any of the animated series, but I think, yeah, it's still pick and choose, because there's definitely episodes of TNG that are like, that's going to scare her. Like, that's a lot. So I pre-watching all of Discovery, and there definitely will be a time, you know, when we'll watch this series, because I think it's great television. But yeah, it's, I guess for me with the F-bomb.
Bombs.
F-bombs.
I'm sure they're
F-bombs.
Yeah, F-bombs. Oh, it's, you know, they're so
they
close to each other,
pairs.
It kind of blurs into one. But, you know, I think it's just, I guess you could have, I was okay with how they did it, as far as it did kind of fit into the scene and which character did it and how everyone reacted to it. It wasn't just like for whatever's sake. But I don't know. I just, people, I've heard people say like, oh, well, that's the time we're in now, like, it should be okay. And I'm like, yeah, but it's still swearing. Like, I'm not saying I don't want any swearing in my Star Trek. Like, I think that's silly. But I also feel that, you know, it could be above that. You know, I don't really want every single character, you know, swearing, because that makes it more real. Like, of course we're going to have swearing in the future. Well, yeah, or we could also, of course, not have swearing. Like, you could go either way. It's fiction.
Well, for one thing, I know for sure that as soon as that first F-bomb flew, I somehow felt in my heart of hearts that the guys over at Swear Trek Twitter feed just were like, well, time to close up shop, guys. We're done.
Our job here is done.
We're done. There's nothing more for us to do. But I am, I'm coming from a background of someone who was raised from a pretty young age to think, if you're going to swear, you're going to swear. It's more about the context than the usage of the words. I really appreciated that in this context here, it was just like, oh my God, this is so cool. This science is amazing.
Right. It was a positive swear.
It was definitely a positive swear. And I also think that to paint just that single word as the thing that could drive us over into TVMA territory, when we've had some truly horrifying things happen in the history of Star Trek, like, we've had talks about genocide. We've had rape come up before. We had an episode where a guy steals another guy's face and staples it onto his own. That was all totally PG, though. But the F word, that's where the line is drawn. It's really telling. I'm going to get into that whole European, oh, it's just this American prudishness thing. But but it really,
no one's been naked yet in the European way.
Well, the season's only a third of the way done. Who knows? But it really is one of those things of we fear just, you know, curse words because, oh, the delicate sensibilities. But when it comes to violence, you're like, oh, well, that's just part of TV now. I think
I
it's really
don't like the violence in this episode.
I really think it's weird what we prioritize as making content mature. And I think that's definitely worth considering.
No, that's very true.
And especially, I mean, in Star Trek, has a history of, you know, not particularly holding these sorts of like language issues to be a big deal. I mean, you know, as soon as Star Trek could say as the S word, it did. I mean, it did as soon as possible. I mean, there was a lot of swearing for the time in the original series. This is not something that is ever
bonk bonk bonk.
Damn it, Jim, I'm not swearing. Oh wait, I do every time I say that type of line.
Star Trek has never shied away from this, so now it has the opportunity to be a little more however you want to call it, a little more raw, a little more real, whatever. I think those are stupid words to apply to something like this.
Kind of like being real. I mean, I don't watch futuristic, optimistic, utopian sci-fi for realness. I have the news for that on reality TV.
I mean, the spore drive is totally real. Like, that's why I watch Star Trek Discovery.
I do appreciate the gingers bonding. I mean, I can appreciate that.
I know, right? It was the sweetest. I love any time you get to see the super abrasive character and the super honest character be like, you, I get it. I get it. We're bonding.
We just hashtag scienced.
Yeah.
Well, and
did we just become best friends? We just became best friends.
Yep. And in yes. In the context of that scene, of course, the swearing is what we're talking about. But that is a fantastic scene. That is a
look. Context is for kings.
We did learn.
Well, the butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry. I think you're forgetting that, Darren.
Stop trying to get on this train, Philip. Okay,
I just think it's a great scene, anyways, and you feel that elation as well. So it's and they're sciencing their way out of stuff. So you know it's such a perfect Star Trek.
You can't get much more Star Trek than that. I mean, even from that first episode when we got that incredible visual metaphor of shooting a hole into the broken well to bring water to this parched desert. This show has been really toying around with this idea of what is it that Starfleet can be and that we wish it was versus what is actually happening. And that dichotomy, I feel like, is going to make for some really interesting storytelling. I feel like they've been teasing us with that a little bit.
And it's interesting to have, I don't know, I feel it's a little black and white, so I'm not that captivated by it, but it is obviously a science versus militaristic viewpoint in Discovery. And again, it's a little too black and white because I think it's a little more subtle than just like you have Lorca or you have Stamets, and those are the only choices. I'm like, well, they can both be pretty horrible at times, or good at times.
Well, I prefer my shades of gray with lens flare, I guess.
That's right.
Oh wow!
I like that. Thank you.
By the way, I this is just a weird thing. It just random pops in my head, so there'll be no way to cram this into the podcast. When they were in the Klingon, what were they called? Raiders ships?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, the clear bubble, like, that would freak me out a little.
You mean the peacocks? Because they look like peacocks to me.
They were. They were less bird of prey, more bird of paradise.
Yes.
But I guess now we know for sure that Wonder Woman is part Klingon with the invisible jet.
Well, I can see it a little bit. We did have a female
captain. Look, you need line of sight for transport, Philip. Mm-hmm. If you can't see them, you can't beam them.
I am Diana, House of Themyscira. Is that what that would be? I don't know.
Ooh.
A Batleth of Truth would go a little differently.
Vok is being taken to that matriarchal house, who we don't know. It could be.
Is it just going to be Themyscira in space? Because I am there for that.
Oh, Planet Scarab. Planet Klingon's Themyscira.
If Robin
Wright
shows up, oh my god, that would be incredible.
You know what, Daniel? I don't like how they changed the Klingons, okay? Just a bunch of...
What if her house is that we keep hearing about? If she's a Bator. Like, that's what...
Oh my gosh!
I mean, they were Duros, but I
I suppose they were. Yeah, you're right.
But still,
I'm sorry, House. But yeah, I guess her.
But still, I'm really liking that idea.
Family name?
Yeah, I know it's not a great thing to say. I'm really into this whole Klingon cast thing they've got going on here. I'm not.
I mean, sure.
As a rule, I'm not.
Utopia, but.
As a rule, I'm not really into cast systems, but I think it's interesting what they're doing with the world building, and that's something that I've been really interested in the Klingons from day one. At one point during my live tweet, I was like, I'm already down for this based entirely on the vibe that these guys feel like they would burst into an opera at any minute. And I believe it. I still keep believing it.
Now, was that, and I've only saw the episode once, and it was during my lunch break, so I may not have gotten the subtleties, but was the Klingon captain, was she kind of albino-ish too, or was that my...
I think it was just the color of her outfit was making it was washing her out, as we say in the
So she's more of a Klingon summer, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that's what I was trying to tell. Like, that's not Laurel, right?
No.
That's a different
Klingon. Oh, Taryn, hold on. Hold on. Are you saying they all look alike? Is that what's coming across here?
Don't be that guy, Darren.
Don't be that guy.
I'm trying to not be, but the
although
the,
to be fair, Laurel and this other Klingon captain both have the white the lighter outfits going on.
Right, they had the same outfits, and
shit, maybe it was.
And they and she did say I came from a well, she said she came from a house of lies of liars, and I'm like, well, Laurel said the exact same thing.
Guys, we're gonna have to look
so,
this up.
Yeah,
was
that
this
makes
Laurel
more sense.
Or not?
No, no, it was Laurel, not Laurel.
It was L'Oreal.
Sure oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, L'Oreal. Because I know she got, you know, she's not dead. She got half acid burned, so I think she's going to show back up with, you know, a big old facial
scar.
Wait,
you mean it's the other Klingon with the red stripe? I can't handle more than one. It's, I thought when that happened, I don't know how on track we are here, but when that happened, you know, for one thing, A, I don't think Lorca would usually miss, but whatever, we'll just say, like, did he do it on purpose? Because that's the only thing I could accept.
Wait
like,
a minute,
maybe
wait,
he's like, I'll blind her just like I'm blinded.
He's giving her her pain.
No.
He's forcing her to remember the ones that got away.
That's right.
I do have
you'll never forget the day that you almost captured Captain Lorca.
Yeah.
I do have something to say about the scene, because I was curious about it, and upon rewatching it, I don't think he missed on purpose, because I specifically watched this. I'm like, wait a minute. I guess we don't know the effect of a bouncing disintegrator effect.
Smoke drifter phaser.
Yeah, so it like it actually does hit the bulkhead and then bounce off and hit her in the face. Because I'm like, why didn't it just disintegrate her? That makes no sense. So it bounces off and hits her in the face. Shouldn't we assume that would... I mean, I guess whatever, storytelling, whatever. But that should kill her. That should kill her, right? I mean, it just bounces off the thing and still hits her in the face.
But Klingon architecture is very absorbent to phaser.
We don't even know how many organs they have, honestly.
Well,
they're all
not
about
the, same
the
number.
Dingy atmosphere, but shockingly reflective surfaces.
Okay, looking up on the internet data, that is Laurel.
Oh!
Is her.
So, okay, I have a couple of questions.
I'm going to have to watch that episode again, because...
What's the
I was
going to
say,
because
she said they're on a D7 ship. Well, that's all they say.
That's what they say.
And it's a prison ship.
as the Star Trek internet blew up.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, they rolled the dice, and that's the number that came up.
Because shouldn't Vok also be on there, or did like she just drop Vok off?
That's what I'm curious about.
She dropped him off at Grandma's place. She's having a weekend to herself. She found a new ship.
It is weird that there's no establishing, like, we left and went to this other ship.
Well, also, remember, though, in the beginning, we have the briefing.
She can have her own life going on outside of Vok.
And in that briefing, though, they establish a lot of the missions the Discovery's been on.
So there's a time gap.
So obviously, time has
passed. Yeah, that's true.
They do say it's about 3 weeks, and that's fine. I accept your explanation, Darren. But for these two major characters, there's still no establishing that. That's still something that you would expect to see or have some passing reference to.
Like, because then you're going to get into the, again, I mean, I'm not saying this is bad. I'm just, as a fact or as a conjecture, then the next episode has to be like 3 weeks earlier and then show the Klingons, you know, leading up to.
Which could, yeah. Yeah, it
which
could
is fine,
that.
I guess.
If they do, in the next scene, or next episode, if they show like, if they show it from, oh God, what, Vok? Vok's position?
Yes.
And then they show the same scenes, and maybe he's, like, in the background or something, and I that's what I'm saying. I don't know. They would have to, in some way, put him in there, I suppose.
I don't know. I love the idea that Vok was there the whole time. He was just slightly out of frame.
Just off camera.
That's right.
Just like, what, after all we've been through? Yeah, you tell him. He's off in the corner with a sandwich.
But think about this, though. I always got the impression from Laurel, like, yeah, she was... Well, basically, she was the number one, you know, to Vok. I get the feeling that in Cole's, you know, by siding with him, like, she's just another cog in the Klingon defense, you know, group. So I can totally get that she's, you know, she's on this prison ship and she's in charge of that. Like, that's her, you know, That's her role. Wait,
but she left. I don't. She left last episode.
Now, did he
right?
notice? Because she said he'll probably notice, but maybe you're saying he didn't notice. But then, how did she catch up with him? Because his ship left.
I'm saying she. I'm saying she got back. Yeah,
he stole a ship.
Yeah, I think she dropped him off and then got back in and just was like, "Oh, I was off doing this, and now she's doing."
He didn't
her.
Even notice she was gone.
I get the feeling
that
like the Klingon fight. Yeah, probably.
This is just what
probably.
She does on her weekends off.
That's right.
Sometimes she's a follower of T'Kuvma. Sometimes she's, you know, has a prison ship. We don't get to tell her how to live her life. That's her business.
I was gonna say, though, on this prison ship, though, we meet two new characters that we've seen for the first time.
Oh, the out to lunch guy. Yeah, I really thought. I mean, what he brought to this episode. No,
not the out to lunch guy. But no, we get Harry Mudd, and we also get the actor's name, which Ash Tyler,
Lieutenant,
which is way easier to say, Lieutenant, species human,
as far as
which
we
is
know.
Interesting.
From
interesting, you say that because if I recall correctly, he was originally cast as a Klingon in pre-production and got traded in some sort of a. Red Rover, sent Ash Taylor over into being a Starfleet member. And so I assume...
Originally he was going to play Cole, the protege to T'Kuvma. And then in the final version, he went on to play Ash, and T'Kuvma's protege was renamed Volk and portrayed by a different actor. So, and Cole became the leader of the rival house. So it seems like a lot of things shifted from... You know, the series was delayed for quite a while, guys. Yeah.
But I think Ash, I mean, I feel like he's not a one-off or a two-off. Well, I don't know, maybe he'll get killed.
No, I don't think that's what's going to happen, considering sort of the emotional bring-in we were given with him.
Sure. And, okay, so let's talk Ash, if you don't mind. So, all right, so we're going to get to a sensitive subject here, listeners, but we're going to handle it in a mature and fine manner. So it's obviously said that... as part of his time as being a prisoner, that Lieutenant Taylor is certainly the, I don't know what the word you want to use, but I'll just say the rape victim of, I'll say Klingon captain. I know y'all are saying Laurel. I'll say Klingon captain for now. And, you know, being tortured and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought that's, again, for this TV MA rating, you know, F-bombs, rape, kicking heads in. Again, I thought it was kind of thrown in there. I mean, they did certainly commit a little bit to it because he certainly wails on her at the end before Lorca, you know, blast faced her. But yeah, I mean, I thought that was kind of a heavy thing to just kind of like Kaz mention. Like, by the way, yeah, she's been, you know, I'm not trying to make light of it, raping the heck out of him.
I'm going to definitely say for one thing, if you were to count up how many times a woman's sexual assault has just been kind of offhand mentioned in Star Trek versus a male. There definitely is a precedent set for rape being used as just kind of, I hate to say it, but kind of an instant backstory every now and then. We at one point in Voyager, we have a guy who's talking about, he's like, no, I'm brooding and dramatic. Also, my girlfriend got raped. So, and then it's just like, what? You're just going to throw that in the middle of a Voyager episode? Really? And it's definitely not the first time I've seen it happen in media. And I was actually... I was really intrigued by this episode because, and this is gonna sound weird to be the thing that was intriguing, but not only is it one of the few times that I've actually seen any TV show, much less a network TV show, talk about a male character being sexually assaulted, it was one of the only times I can think of where it wasn't treated as a joke and was treated as a serious trauma. And one of the things that I don't know if there's something to actually glean from this, but it was something that was interesting me because when they first announced that Rainn Wilson was going to be playing Harry Mudd, on one hand I was like, oh, Rainn Wilson, he has excellent comedy chops and he can do a dramatic turn pretty well, but the last time his name was kind of getting thrown around in the blogosphere, it was actually because of another show's portrayal of sexual assault against a male. On the Cameron Crowe show, Roadies, his character is a journalist who it's treated like a fun and games kind of thing, but the crew for this band, who they think he's going to write a bad review for, they pretty much drug him, attack him. It's implied that that a woman sexually assaults him, and then he is pushed off a stage, I think, and then at the end it's like, but it's all part of the punk rock lifestyle, and he takes it with a smile on his face, and... both the New York Times, myself, and the entire blogosphere were like, what the hell is wrong with you? That is a very big, pervasive problem that we have with rape culture in the media, is that when it's seen as a joke sometimes, and almost exclusively when it happens to a male character, it is treated as a joke because men aren't supposed to have feelings, apparently, and
or it's not a big deal, right? Because hey, I had sex with a woman. Who? Hey, that's yes, high fives all around.
Or it doesn't matter if she was unconscious. It was sex. It's like no, it was rape. But especially with male characters, it's treated as it's not really rape if it's a guy, or it's funny if it happened to a guy, and it is equally traumatizing. And this is probably one of the reasons male rape is a lot less reported than female rape, and that even that is on a very low scale. And so I thought that was really interesting that this thing that I was still kind of mentally holding against Rainn Wilson for, you know, going into that project and being like, yeah, this is okay, going into shoot and be like, yeah, this is okay, acting it out and being like, yeah, this is still okay, and then the whole thing, and then this episode where we see him come in and not only give a very good performance, but it was very sympathetic in terms of trauma for this character and his assaults. And I was really impressed by that. And I'm not sure what there is to glean there Rainn Wilson-wise. I just thought it was an interesting connection.
Right. Because, I mean, I think, and we can talk Mudd, and we will talk Mudd, but...
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
Well, but, you know, Mudd obviously is like, oh, yeah, he's in with the captain. Nudge, wink. And you're like, okay, right. But I think what's going to be interesting that I'll be looking for... I mean, because again, if you're going to throw this out, you've thrown it out here. So now, if you're going to show Ash Taylor again, he can't be hunky-dory next episode. Well, I'm glad I'm back on Starfleet.
They
Everything's
better
perfect
not,
now.
Man.
Yeah, so that would be my only worry if you did such a traumatic. Because, I mean, look, on top of the sexual trauma, and he's been presumably tortured. Like, he couldn't even know how long it was, you know, and all those things.
He's been there for 7 months, presumably.
Yeah. In captivity, but you know he doesn't, you know, but so he needs to have a slow burn of getting back to society, or else.
If there's one ongoing beef that I consistently have with any sort of serialized TV show, and I have, so therefore I've had a lot with different versions of Star Trek, it's having a character have a life-changing trauma one episode, and then just having it never be mentioned again or never have any real effect, and that. It's a case where it's really clear. It's like, oh, you just kind of threw some trauma at the screen for this episode and didn't really care about how it was going to affect the character.
Yeah, I mean...
I brought this whole conversation down, didn't I?
No. I agree with you. This seems like stuff that Star Trek has tackled before, you know, sometimes better, sometimes worse. This doesn't seem out of character, I don't think, for Star Trek at all. And I wasn't aware of, like, this guy being a major character at all, but I was like, well, it seems like he's going to be important because of the way it was portrayed, the seriousness that the situation was given, and the emotional, you know, payoff, quote-unquote, he gets at the end here. What surprised me, actually, just in Star Trek universe canon-wise, was when he was wailing on her. Mm-hmm. I almost expected, like, a smile out of her or some sort of enjoyment because this is the kind of stuff that we're told that the Klingons, you know, that's kind of their thing.
I guess even if you're a Klingon rapist, you need consent before you get into the real dark and dirty stuff.
we have the old line, you know, this is Klingon sex, but it is alien to me now. And like, that's exactly the kind of stuff I imagine that.
Yeah, Klingon sex is usually treated as a joke.
Yes.
Also, holy hell, did they imply that Klingons have like two vaginas?
Well, that's been already established. I mean,
really?
It's been established that Klingons have redundant organs. That is what we're told.
Oh, wow.
I just assumed that meant like extra nards or something.
Well,
this is
I believe that assume is the word you used, Grace. And so
yes, it is implied.
When you assume, you make an extra third and fourth testicle out of you and me.
That's right.
You make a duplicate vagina out of everyone.
But just because I think this is, change here to the conversation. you brought up Mud.
Yeah, Mud. And, let's talk Mud.
Now I am a huge Rainn Wilson fan. Just
he's fabulous. He gives
from The Office.
He gives a fantastic performance.
I was excited to see him. I have no love for the Mud character, but I thought he did really well.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think he's placing layers in Mud.
Mud layers, in other words?
Mud layers, yes. Yeah.
So, layers of debris, I think that, if you will.
In even like the end line that he has, which is super cheesy, I thought was done pretty well.
Next time, Gadget! Next
but
time!
But they absolutely had me there, because it's like, oh, he's not only going to be back, he's going to be back with a vengeance against Lorca, and I want to see how that happens. He definitely makes a really captivating Mud in the sense that you know he's horrible, you see him doing bad things, but you absolutely want to see what he's going to do next. And I definitely credit some of that skill and finesse to Rainn Wilson's comedy background. If you can, there's a double, there's this whole idea that comedy and horror are two parts of the same coin, and if you can do comedy that unnerves, then you can do an unnerving character that can make you laugh, and I think that we're seeing that from him, and I can't wait to see more.
Now, and Daniel, I know you're not super TOSC, and Grace, I don't know how your TOS is. Is Stella the ex-wife in iMud?
I honestly don't remember off the top of my head, but I'm assuming so. And so now we know what happens to that moon he got her.
Yeah, I'd have to. I mean, not that, well, not that I encourage nor discourage people watching the Mud episodes. I will be neutral about it. Their arguments are both.
It's one of those things where definitely no matter what you emotionally take away from it, you'll learn something from watching it, be it about yourself, yes, the 60s, or just how TV writing works against women in some ways.
Because I'm trying to think. The moon's bizarre. And again, it's just simple. Go watch the episode, Phil. It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So I feel like this may be taken from...
I could have memory alphaed this before we started, but that would have required getting off my cloud of tardigrades.
City Alpha 3 is pretty lazy. We don't have the computers around here, so it's fine.
I did the same exact thing where I was like, you know, I could look it up to see if it how accurate it is from what we already knew. But I felt like even if it is, or even if part of it is, a lot of that story was fabricated by Mud.
Absolutely. We have no idea.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense for us not to really ever know the truth. Even if this contradicts what we know from TOS, it feels like it's just one way he uses to manipulate people. And, you know, like...
It would definitely make sense, yeah.
Yeah, and like,
it doesn't really make sense why he's there. Because, you know, theoretically, Lieutenant Taylor, and I've only saw it once, I forget what they said, but something with his ship or something with his captain.
Yeah, the Battle of the Binary Stars, yeah.
But he had some information the Klingons still wanted, or something. Or, well, no, he was the rape slave. I mean, I'm not trying to say that casually, but that he was that. And then Captain Lorca obviously had the spore drive. But, like, why is Mud still there? What do the Klingons need from Mud?
I think that's actually part of the fun we're getting from this series so far, and that is that in Star Trek as a franchise, we're definitely taught to take everyone's word kind of for what it is. We're used to these soliloquies. We're used to this very Shakespearean explanation of this is what I'm all about, and now you, the audience, will run with that absolutely. But the fact that we've got definitely this dark shading to Discovery, and we were given kind of a lot of subjective half-truths already, you really have to wonder how much do we know about anybody, because aside from Michael Burnham's backstory, we have a lot of unanswered questions. So I really got to wonder, not just with Mud, but with was it Taylor or Tyler? I can't remember. But you've got to wonder, like, what's his whole deal? You have to ask that about every character being brought in.
Is he a Klingon spy?
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know what? I like the...
We only have his word. Yeah.
I think he has one of the best lines in the episode, though, when he's talking about Starfleet versus normal civilians.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot more of us little guys than there are of you people up in the stars, and I really liked that.
See, I hated that so much because, you know, it would be interesting for lack of a better word, if it was done in Legacy Trek, I don't know what else to call it, it would be an interesting contrast. But in here, you're like, yeah, Starfleet does seem terrible from everything I've seen in the past five episodes. You know, yeah, they are horrible. You know, but it was like, because it just reminds me of stuff like, you know, Paradise Lost or the Ferengi on Deep Space Nine when Quark's talking about, oh, Starfleet. Because then when does the story end with, oh, but we need them and they're a good, you know, a force for good and for all that. But to, you know, with the Harry Mudd, he always seems, oh, wait a minute, he's sympathetic. But I'm like, that's horrible. Then why do we want to root for the Starfleet people if we think he's right? You know, well, that's...
But he specifically gains an issue with Starfleet after the war starts. Yeah. He says, I was a respectable... Everything was going great in the universe, essentially.
Also, now they punched his bug.
Yeah,
don't
they
punch
did.
His bug.
You almost killed them.
It's a metaphor.
Stuart's a metaphor in general. I do think that this version of Mudd that we're seeing already is a really good example of sort of the Aaron Sorin straw man kind of thing, that you can bring in a character to be a foil to your character's ideals, and you can have them be someone who they can argue with, and that they're specifically there for them to argue with, but it adds so much to the story if you make them have convictions that you can actually believe someone's standing behind, and just aren't completely flat, like, well, I just don't like the cut of your jib, versus this is what I believe, and you can understand why I would believe that.
I think the hard part with, even though... I'm not a fan of Lorca. I don't want to say that, but he is an interesting character who I am following. You know, but he's sort of the worst person to be like,
oh, yeah.
Yes, Captain Lorca, you argue against Mudd as the epitome of Starfleet. Like, Lorca's the worst representative to argue Mudd. You know, like, get Michael in there or something, you know? But that's...
Get Tilly in there. Everyone would just lie down and die for Tilly.
Or Captain Georgiou.
Never in the same parsec. It's not
Lorca is... Oh, man. Every episode...
He draws you in, doesn't he? Like,
he does.
Like
man,
him
like,
or hate him, and I know that's so, you know, cliche.
Again, though, you want to know what his deal is. You're curious at this point.
Because we got some more backstory. Captain of the...
Did he grab a phaser and defend his captain and make the wrong decision?
No, sort of the B. Like, it wasn't Borneo, but it was something.
It was one symbol, or syllable.
But anyway, but he, you know, so the story we're told, and correct me if I'm wrong, we saw what?
The bottom?
Bottom of the sea voyage of the bottom of the sea. Oh my god, he's Captain... No, yeah.
The Baloo! The Baloo! It's the Baloo!
The Baloo. From the Jungle Book.
Yes, named
I think
for history's greatest dancing bear.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to be like you, ooh, ooh. The timeline threw me off. Because it's like he was captain of the... We're going to say Baloo. I'm sticking with it. The Klingon War...
Like, in the beginning, yeah.
Like, so 5 months ago?
I think it was 1 month in, I think they said, yeah.
Oh,
Baran.
Yeah.
Baran.
USS
Baran.
Baloo
sounded better. I'm going with that. So with the Baloo, so, you know, and, you know.
Thank you, Memory Alpha, for being on it.
So he, you know, the ship gets attacked, whatever. I guess Klingons are going to, you know, take prisoners.
By the Klingon Kier Shaan, yeah.
Yeah, and then so he's like, he somehow escapes and somehow self-destructs to save them from being prisoners, which... Okay, but I mean that's you know, we get a raised eyebrow from all in the room about that. So, but you know that's sort of a not an ends justifies the means, but sort of we get a Lorca will take extreme measures, I guess.
Captain Picard does it.
Would you drive off a bridge if Picard drove off a bridge?
I was just saying. It sounded
well,
like...
only if I was going into a shuttle that I knew was there, then I'd totally do it.
I mean,
it.
If a bridge fell on Kirk, which... Oh, wait, that's different.
Oh, geez, too soon, too soon.
It's just amazing to me. And I when I went back and saw this episode for the second time, I didn't remember the first time that Lorca's the one telling the story. I thought... When I watched the episode the first time, I thought that he had implied something happened to the ship with all the people on it to protect them.
And by the way,
like,
how
no,
is Mudd so well
he's
informed?
He's the one who tells you.
Like, he's like those prisoners who know Michael's the mutineer. Mudd knows all about the Starfleet vessels and Captain Lorca.
Maybe there's like a secret underground prison Twitter system using those funky bugs.
Hashtag where's Gabriel Lorca?
Using the bugs.
Crazy ex-girlfriend.
yes!
Bug chat. One of the things, like you were saying, Daniel, like one of the lines you liked was... You know, said by I'm blanking on it now. By Mudd, yeah, about the little people. But one of the lines I liked was by by Ash, where it's just a little thing where Lorca's all like, he's like, what's your story? And then Ash is like, oh, I was on this ship, you know. And he's like, oh, at the Battle of the Binary Stars. And he's like, oh, they gave it a name.
Yeah.
Like, because of course he wouldn't know that. He's been captured the whole time. And that just was such a little, like, POW moment.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, yeah, in your world, this has a name and plaques are probably already on memorial stones. And but for me, like, that's the day my world totally changed. And it was, again, a very little line, but I really liked it. Good
for
job,
Lorca,
writers.
It was
good
a
job.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me,
for Lorca, it was a day he didn't blow up his entire ship and kill his crew. I mean, hey, you got to look at a positive
but I love,
output for that
again,
day.
I find myself wanting to become a Lorca apologist, and I don't want to be. But I'm the same guy who likes Nixon, so it all works out. But like the fact that how he captures that story, right? Because the cliche would be like, oh no, you revealed my truth. I can explain. But he's like, well, that's only half true. What I, you know,
yeah, I'm going to tell you more incriminating evidence against myself.
Yeah. And so, but like, he, Lorca owns who he is, which I mean, he is. He is who he is, this person who wants to win the war.
I will give you a thought here, though. Okay. What if all of this mysterious backstory stuff is Lorca just bluffing fortune cookie style? Since we've established that's what he knows, so he knows I can just make vague.
Wait, is this going to be some sort of like, what's the usual suspects kind of thing at the, like the last episode? Michael's opening up all the fortune cookies and it's revealing all these
what's
things
the
that
cookie?
Lorca has said the
what's
whole
in
time.
The
it's like I blew up my own ship. Wait, why would that be in a cookie? You know, it's
just
like
out of nowhere she's going to tardigrade all the time. So just randomly said you love Chinese food. Your lucky numbers are 7, 12, and 8.
Although it's funny, we were speaking of the fortune cookies before we started this transmission. I was talking about how when Saru was captain intermediately, I was surprised he didn't take the bowl of fortune cookies, put it down, and then bring out a bowl of blueberries. And he's like, yeah, Saru's time.
Time to shine.
Blueberries for everybody.
No, because I think about what Saru needs to do, and I think they're doing this on purpose. Is that he just has a random food every episode? So you know we had the salt tea.
That, yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Hang on. If
pistachios.
If we're talking about Saru, I have a question to ask about Saru.
Okay.
Because the episode makes this point, and this is why I think his superpower is stupid. But and they're so
with being tall. I feel like he could reach a lot of things, Daniel.
And they're so inconsistent. The first time, in the beginning of the episode, when Michael is coming to the bridge to talk to Saru for the first time about the tardigrade. As soon, right before she comes out of the turbo lift, his little bits come out.
Phalanges.
Yeah.
Ganglia. And,
threat ganglia, ganglia is the official
then,
term.
But we need to call them his bits now.
Yeah.
his redundant organs.
Yeah, there you go. The next time he talks to Michael, she specifically says to him, you don't fear me anymore, do you? And he says, no. And I don't understand, like, it's so inconsistent. In the same episode, he gets it as soon as she appears. I don't know if there's, like, a deeper meaning that I'm missing, or I just feel like it's so inconsistent because she asks him, are you afraid of me anymore? No, I do not. I no longer have fear for you, he says.
Maybe
I'm jealous of you.
Maybe he learned a lot in that episode, Daniel, and not only learned a lot about himself, but us. And really, we became a family not because of our differences, but despite them.
Okay, that's fine. That means his ability is not based in external reality.
It's not a spidey
sense.
It's how you feel.
It's based on his perception, and that totally changes the game.
You're right,
because
the TARDIS grade non-reaction would have been an outside, we'll say objective or subjective, would have been an objective reaction. And so you're saying Michael should be an objective reaction, and you're saying
if he fears her, or if what I'm saying is not if he fears her,
maybe
he
was like
to fear her.
In the beginning of the episode it was just a coincidence, he's like, did I leave the oven on? And then Michael
I'm just
walks
saying,
in.
And then we there was the other episode a few weeks ago where
did I leave the replicator running?
I know, I can't remember specifically, but when the shuttle leaves, and we talked about that, and what did that mean?
Right.
Did he know that maybe the shuttle was going to get destroyed? Did he know that Michael wasn't on the shuttle? his powers right now are just plot based, and it totally changes. Like,
then there's a very simple explanation for this. Saru is the counselor Troy of this series.
Captain, I sense he's dangerous. Well, the phasers are armed. Yeah, I got that, Saru. Thanks for showing up.
We just gotta hold out.
They're shooting at us right now, Saru. I'm pretty sure they're dangerous. Just thanks a lot. Something that could have been brought to my attention yesterday.
We just gotta hold out now for Saru to get some big hair and plunging necklines. He's already got the heels, so.
He does have the heels.
I want him to change outfits every season.
I know, right? I swear, I hope that there's a future Saru episode that's just him posing dramatically all over the place.
I think he does that naturally.
I want an episode devoted to it.
But see, we know he couldn't have beamed aboard to kill the Klingon Chancellor because he couldn't have worn those gravity boots.
That's awesome.
Not everybody's a suspect anymore.
Perhaps you know old Russian set.
if the shoe fits. That's totally not a Russian thing.
From Cinderella. Did anyone get like that they did super close up of Saru's face in multiple times, which I thought was interesting.
He was really close.
That's a really good makeup job. I mean, guys, I appreciate it. I notice it, but zoom out a little bit.
Glenn Hetrick was saying all over the place at Star Trek Las Vegas, we made this for you to see it in HD.
That's true.
We want that to be...
Right, we're not going to hide it in the background.
We're not
I like the new perspective.
Now, have we talked about the... have we talked about Ripper and his ascension into the warp drive plane?
I know.
Oh man, when he like constricted into like survival mode, it's like
water broke.
You guys done enough.
Oh my gosh,
up.
We're gonna have to call the hospital. We haven't even rehearsed.
That would have been the only thing worse is if he did that and then like a baby one came out. That would be the only thing that could be possibly worse.
No, that would have been
then what
like,
happened.
You know, he ascends out and they're like, oh, and then you hear like a squeak, squeak, and you look around and there's a little baby tardigrade in the corner.
Actually,
and then
it's more like
Michael
a rah rah.
Michael goes, oh, credits roll.
Yes.
Cue the Curb Your Enthusiasm.
No, no, Tilly.
Music.
She has that. Oh, she has that face that she's about to say.
It'll be interesting to
baby
see
tardigrade.
If there are lasting. I assume there will be, but that Saru will face some sort of lasting consequence for this decision.
Well, I believe Lorca may not be happy that the Discovery can no longer. Well,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
it can. We just have to sacrifice a crew member.
He's fine with that. I think when it comes with Stamets, and it's like, you know, a crew is like, sir, I'm sorry that we lost the tardigrade. Lieutenant Stamets' experiment. Oh, what? We can use Stamets? Well, yes, sir, but damn. All right, let's do it. Jump.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think you could. I've watched enough sci-fi to know, like, in the plot or in the pacing of the shots, you could tell, like, it's not, they did not reawake the tardigrade. Like, we all could tell that was not
going to happen.
Yeah, when
it was like, have you awakened the the drive's ready. Yeah, okay, we know he's going to.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not going to not say, but they obviously I thought they were going towards Michael.
I thought so, too, because he's a jerk.
Choosing,
I think we were set up to think that because of that dream sequence shot at the very beginning. So this was their attempt at surprising.
Right, her symbiotic relationship with it. Yeah. But I was more surprised, and it made more sense that Stamets made the choice
why not?
You know, I'm not going to kill this creature, which, you know. And then it was a little weird at the end where they're like, it's dead, but it's really not, but we have no bearing on its soul, whatever the heck that means. But now it's alive, and it's gone.
It was
whatever,
emotional.
But,
now,
you know. I mean, Saru...
Daniel, you're an IT guide. Was the tardigrade in sleep or hibernate mode? What would be the term that you would use for...
It would be hibernate over sleep, for sure, because it loses all of its, you know, water containment or whatever.
RAM?
Yeah.
Is that it's dumping its RAM?
It's...
just flushing the system.
I'm glad we're rid of it, in a way.
No, I'm glad, because I'd hate to have to do RIP Ripper, because it'd be very confusing.
RIP
and
peace,
as a hashtag.
Ripper.
Yeah.
Rip. Oh, geez.
We're starting to see the faults in this technology. We're starting to see the issues here.
We'll see the cost of the technology, really.
The cost of the CGI, needless to say.
Yeah, that's right. You just have to stab people now. It's fine.
Yeah, I saw it.
Or show that they've been stabbed. That's I mean, right. We did.
We've seen a lot of stabbings on this show so far.
How many crew are on the Discovery? Because that's how many jumps we're going to do.
Oh, they mention it. They mention it, actually, and I made a note of it. It's 130.
Was it like 140?
It's 138, yeah. I believe, is what they say. Yeah. So it's roughly half the size of the Enterprise, right? Because the Enterprise has 300 souls on it, right? That's what they say. I thought it was 300, but...
And we've established at least one of those crew members is an Andorian with tonsillitis.
That's right.
Oh!
Yeah, when are we going to see the Andorian?
We also get a lot more, and forgive me with names, but they mention the name of the character, and they cut to her like a whole bunch. Robot Lady, who's awesome.
Yeah!
Robot Lady!
Yes, I love Ensign Daft Punk. She's great.
We get a lot of these. Have they named everyone? I'm sorry, I'm going to just label people. I apologize. The black con woman, the very natural hair, kind of cool looking.
Her hair is
I don't
amazing.
Yeah, because she's reoccurring.
Okay.
And she named her, yeah, I just can't remember off the top of my head.
Because we have Funky Red Ginger. I know she has a name. It's like starts with a D. Last name, but anyway, so the funky redhead.
Okay, Robo Lady
and the funky redhead. I'm calling name, you for my soul group name.
Her name is Lieutenant Commander Arium.
Arium.
I wanna be where.
So is she? If she was Lieutenant Commander, is she third in command then? Because he talks to her a lot in this.
Yeah, I think she's the third of command. Okay. Yeah, and then Black Mohawk Girl is Lieutenant Junior Grade Joanne. Owaskun.
Okay. I doubt that's how you pronounce it, but that's fine. Yeah. You tried.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. And then the one who is trying to cosplay
Detmer.
7 of 9 is
Detmer.
Detmer.
Yeah, she was in the Discovery novel. No, out in stores. So yeah, but so we get that this is the frustrating thing about Discovery, which whatever. This is a small complaint, but I'm just saying it exists. We're 5 episodes in. Cannot name you their CMO. Cannot name you their chief engineer. Now, does it matter? No. But I'm just saying, you know.
We had a CMO in the first 2 episodes, though.
That's true. And
I was
the guy from
30
Rock, as we all know his name. Yeah.
I was surprised to learn that Lieutenant White Shirt, Dr. White Shirt, White Pants, Fancy Man.
Hot Pants.
Hot
beard.
I didn't know that he wasn't the CMO.
Dr.
I didn't know he was just.
We're just gonna call him Dr. Husband. Dr.
Dr. Long Term Commitment, Grace. We talked about it, but you know, you have a toothbrush in my quarters, and that's how far we've gotten.
They have matching pajamas. Damn it. They have matching pajamas.
Well, as far as we know, everyone has
them
those pajamas.
And everybody else on the ship.
Yeah.
I am not accepting that answer.
Black com badges have black com badge pajamas as well? Or
of course they do.
I choose to believe that instead they're all wearing little lacy teddies.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking because in the 20, you know, how long did it take for Starfleet to allow individual sexy PJs like a Captain Picard or Catherine Janeway,
yeah.
You know, or maybe that's just a captain thing. I don't, and everyone else has to wear the same
pajamas.
You have
pajamas. To earn the right for your sexy PJs. Some people fight for their right to party. You climb the ladder so you could wear that lacy ass bustier.
Well, and technically that the doctor Colbert is a lieutenant commander, and Stamets is a lieutenant, so he outranks him.
So we talked a little bit about...
Look, whatever goes on in that bedroom...
We talked a little bit about the swearing, and to your point, Grace, what you were talking about earlier, it's interesting what people find significant, because obviously the relationship between those two characters is a way bigger milestone for Star Trek than who says the F word, and what seems to be coming up is this the swearing thing, but obviously we're getting our first, out and open... honest to goodness real homosexual relationship
main character because we have to do
a
lot of like modifications
but,
like
but
not
no,
in a movie
not
main characters two main characters
we don't have to put any qualifiers it's just an actual relationship it's not an alien influence nonsense
by the way though I'm already positing my Tracker complaint that this is a weird relationship because Stamets is unlovable, period. I get, yeah, he saved the day this episode. I got it. So he's redeemable. He's not going to the bad place 100%. I'm watching The Good Place now on Netflix season one. But, you know, the doctor, he can do better. He's a doctor. He's a catch. You know, you'll find someone
else. I think
Stamets
is curmudgeonly, but I think he's got a lot to offer.
Yeah, I would definitely believe
well,
that.
Well, all redheads do. I know.
Singing voice, for one thing.
Well, look, you know, his dad is in a Beatles cover band, but that does not make him.
Well, I think that that's something that's actually really interesting to see played with character-wise, to make a character that is at first abrasive and what you would off the bat consider unlikable, and then show you more of that character. It really forces you to rethink what you consider to be unlikable aspects in people. We actually did an episode of Women at Warp recently where the theme was unlikable women characters and how they're so much quicker to be written off as unlikable versus with male characters who are more likely to get called anti-heroes or complicated. It's just interesting to play with the idea of what the audience's preconceived notion of a good person is versus someone who you like.
Well, I was just going to say that, again, man, I really need to learn names. I need to write these down. But the doctor, like, throughout
Dr.
every... I know, it's only been, like, Dr. Hotbeard. I feel like...
Colbert. Dr. Colbert. I'm going to make you guys, like, a bingo sheet, okay?
I feel like mine's better. While he was serving on the USS Baloo, I feel like that every scene they've had with Stamets has been very... Snipey. Of course, this whole crew is snipey.
Are you telling me you've never met a couple whose relationship was entirely based on snipery and that's why they loved each other?
That's why I think it's a weird relationship. I'm not saying it doesn't work for them, much like Tryker works for them, and I find it subjectively odd. But, you know, hey, if it works for you, whatever. I'm just saying from the outside, y'all's weird, but it works for you.
We leave the judging to Judy. Thank you very much.
How much did it change when he said, you know, he's like, the captain was in danger. And he's like, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, you were in danger.
Captains are always in danger.
You were in danger. And it was a great line because it endears you to him. And it reveals to you a greater motivation for what he does and the way he feels and how he thinks. And I thought that was
it's technically the same motivation that Michael said as why she committed mutiny. I'm just, you know.
Okay, see, now I feel like the doctor is like one of those people who feels like he's going to change him.
No.
It's not a reason to be in a relationship, boo. You can do better. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think so. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I know you're an asshole and I love you for it because we can be assholes together.
Can you find me a feeling?
Can I borrow a feeling? Can I borrow your glove of love?
Oh, Milhouse is dead.
His name's Kirk. His name's Kirk, which takes it even further.
I don't do names. We've established that.
Yes, we've established that.
But yeah, I felt this episode, and this isn't a complaint, but just an observation, for Michael being the protagonist, not much in this episode.
I think it's interesting that, you know, she had a plot and all that, but... hers isn't really the plot we're talking about of the three main kind of plots of the episode.
I mean, besides, yeah, Mud, Lorca, or Lorca Mud, however you ship it.
Is there shipped
and then
in
you
Lud?
Have the Stamets.
Is it Lud or Morca?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, and you have Saru and Michael. Yeah.
Bloodfoy.
Yeah, okay. I'll take it.
Bloodfoy. Well, at the very end, we get introduced to a new plot line.
Oh, no. Guys, I think I was like, guys. We use the spore drive, and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Everything is fine.
Yeah, yeah. The first time a human goes through it, it totally worked. Totally.
As soon as residual effects
whatsoever.
Dr. Whitepants started walking away, I'm like, they're going to zoom in. They're going to zoom in on his reflection, and something's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to catch on fire or... or the Tardigrade is going to be behind him hugging him. I don't know what's going to happen.
You are my father now!
It's going to be something that's supposed to be evil.
He starts coughing up slugs.
Yep, he can start coughing up slugs.
Yeah. He's in the upside down.
At first, I thought it was clever. Upon further reflection, it's lazy and...
Reflection.
We don't know for sure that's what's happening, though.
It is true. It's true. But I do think that if it's a mirror universe thing, it's a little on the nose.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
A little heavy-handed.
I like, what if it isn't what we think of the Mirror Universe. What if it's like Frakes, is this his real name in real life, and he's a director. What if when Frakes said, there's a mirror episode, he literally meant...
it's literally in a mirror.
It's a mirror episode. It's you fans who are thinking, oh,
this is it.
Time.
It's all. That's it. That's all we get is this weird, like...
No, it's Alice through the Looking Glass. It's a mirror episode.
To be fair, episode. Though, wouldn't mirror Stamets be just, like, totally chill and nice to everyone?
Awesome. Oh... He would be the best boyfriend ever.
Like, why can't the Mirror Universe be better than ours? Why does it have to be worse?
Instead of researching all these spores, he'd be smoking them, so he would just be totally relaxed.
I don't know. He was traveling on shrooms this episode, so.
Ooh, ba-dum.
That's true. And he's always wanted to. He's a little obsessed with it. His actions in this episode, and this is going way too deep probably, but did he fundamentally change as a character? Now, I mean, he made that decision as the Stamets we know and are in a committed relationship somehow. But it, like, and I know that's the whole point of the ending, is he changed. But, like, having that experience of traveling through Mushroom World, much like Super Mario, but, you know, is this going to literally, like, bring a smile to his face now? You know, is he going to be a little less...
What is the implication of that scene, though? I still don't understand, because, again, I...
So this was my theory. Let's all go through our theories, if you have them.
Mushroom theories?
It reminded me a lot of the sci-fi TV show Fringe, where they actually develop, like, a window into a parallel universe where the Statue of Liberty is copper and everything, you know,
I thought it was copper.
It's
it's unoxidized copper. Yeah. Like, William Sonoma totally installed it, and it looks great. But, yeah, anyway, in that they, you know, Walter creates this window, and he's literally, like, whenever you put it, you can see through, you know, to that exact location. And so this is my theory. If it's supposedly the Mirror Universe, a.k.a. the ISS Discovery, this feels kind of like the beginning. Like, it's... I could say it can go one of two ways. I don't think that Stamets has been switched. I think this is still normal Stamets, but I think now something from the other side is watching him. And I don't get the feeling that Stamets, like, notices or is even capable of, like, seeing what we're seeing with the delayed reflection that's kind of, like, smugly happy that he's being able to see what's going on. So, again, there's very little information to go on, but... I get the feeling that it's more like the boundaries between these universes is weakened and the other side is kind of peering in. And maybe we won't get the mirror episode for a couple more. Maybe it's going to be teased a bit until we go full into it. I don't know. But it definitely was an interesting moment. Well, and next week's episode is titled, it's the name of the Greek spirit of forgetfulness and oblivion.
I always forget.
The word lathe literally means oblivion, forgetfulness, and concealment.
I always forget about her.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially when I'm doing
We haven't gone full Latin yet. That's a little later, but, yeah.
That's a couple episodes later.
Honestly, so. I thought that final scene was just, sort of a metaphorical callback to that opening scene where we've got Michael having the nightmare of herself being reflected in the tardigrade's place, and she's there because she feels guilty of her actions, that she has put the tardigrade in this situation. I thought that final thing was just kind of a reflection of that, and with Stamets being happy with his choice, or at least Stamets or whatever is... writing Stamets right now being happy with the decision involving the tardigrade. That's what I took from it.
Haven't talked about the Admiral again. Don't know her name because we don't do names. Oh,
jeez.
But she has a first name as well.
Yeah, she's cool.
But anyway, she's cool. Yeah, she's a good Admiral. They're far and few in between. Because I do like the, like, where she, you know, is praying a little tough. Because Lorca, hey, that's someone who...
There's a guy who needs
a lot
some tough
by the
love,
Admiral T,
really.
But
her name is Katrina Cornwell. And she knows Lorca, apparently. She's a flag officer, vice admiral.
It was interesting how she was like, hey, if I really wanted to beat on you, I could talk about Michael Burnham. And then you kind of get to the whole history where Lorca's like, hey, it's my ship.
Yeah.
I was told I could do it. You know, whatever.
This is my get out of jail free Monopoly card. And I can play it whenever I want to.
I think it's my ship. And like, I'm a little like, yeah, and you're also part of Starfleet and you're outranked.
Didn't
so
he just have a
no,
thing about
not.
This is the property of Starfleet when he wanted to back up his spore drive, but now it's your ship?
When back up his spore drive.
Yeah,
Aaron.
Yeah.
That spore drive belongs
and
to
he didn't want anyone else to have one.
I mean, Lorca to me is interesting because obviously I think the question whether you like him or not, if you think he's evil or not or whatever, is where is Lorca going to break the line? Now, maybe you said he's broken it already, but, you know, where is he going to break? And I think that's every episode we're going to be like, is this when he's going to? Because we see continually, you know, we get when he's pushing Stamets. Now we get when he's pushing respectfully and friendly the Admiral and saying, hey, here's the line. Is that this my ship? You know, and that was my understanding, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I think it's interesting how he's sort of creating his sort of kingdom of I'm going to win the war, we're going to win the war, you know, and how far does he take that about does using people, because that's what we got from R.I.P. Landry, hashtag, you know, does he use people, does he use his ship, does he use his crew, his former crew, you know, and so I think that's, to me, that is the fascination that I'm sickingly now having with Lorca.
Well, what's interesting to me about that is the reason it's so fascinating is because we don't know, I think, as an audience, we assume his intentions are noble at this point. I mean, his actions may not be, but at least my impression is he just wants to win. He just wants
to win the war.
You know, it's not like he's necessarily trying to break these boundaries for any specific reason other than the preservation of the Federation, which is what we would consider be a noble goal. Other than just he just likes war or whatever. I don't know. To me, it seems like
I like to study war.
Oh my god, again, is he Aries too?
He's a lot of things. Lorca becomes more and more interesting every episode that goes on. So I'm really excited to see what happens with him.
Like I was saying earlier about one of the things that's intriguing me about this show is how I keep mentally feeling like there's gonna be a fake out at some point. Like we've been set up to think a character is one thing and is really another thing. It feels like the kind of Machiavellian voodoo they'd pull with this.
Lorca's a changeling?
Something like that. Oh. I mean, ever since, let's face it, Jason Isaacs really does have a history with playing just bad guys, and part of me thinks it'd be really cool if we got this whole convoluted backstory with Lorca of him just being dark and mysterious and yeah, I kind of killed my entire crew and left my eyes to burn. And it's actually not really. He's secretly a pussycat or something.
And this is a 30-second discussion, but like the fact that, and we talked about this before, yeah, that he's kept his eyes where, you know, they said, dude, just change it. I believe it's the paraphrasing the Admiral. I chose my pain.
Right. Well, any more final thoughts on choosing
why
your
doesn't he
pain?
Just swap out for some sick Geordi LaForge eyes?
Oh, he hasn't there been you invented go. Yet, Grace. Will you look at the cannon?
First, we gotta get to visor technology. That's even in its infancy
right
now.
Yeah, give
him
a great big doofy
like,
visor.
That probably, maybe that whole, you know, robo face, that's probably like visor 1.0. It's the whole head. And then LaForge was lucky it was just a headband.
Now, I want to see robot face sitting next to Lieutenant Daft Punk, because I feel like
I know, right?
They would have a lot in common.
Did we just invent a new pairing?
Maybe. Oh! I think Daft Face.
That's redundant.
Punk? Robot Punk. Yes. Like an organ.
Is that our final thought?
Awesome. Well, Grace, where can people find you on this great, wide, spore-infested internet?
You can find me doing more podcasts with Women at Warp. You can find me on Twitter at BonecrusherJank, and you can find me out back of the Taco Del Mar, diving for dreams.
Daniel, where could someone find you if they wanted to talk about, is that PJ badge metal or fabric?
They can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one. Not the word.
And Philip, where could someone find you if they wanted to find out Lorca, love him or hate him for this moment in time?
Oh, God, I don't want to put up the Lorca poster, but it's going to happen. They can find me on Twitter, where my handle is NC Public Servant.
And if they wanted to talk to me about the surfing the cosmic spore drive, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. So next week, we are going to be talking about, guess it, Star Trek Discovery. Okay, it's okay, guys. We're almost to the mid-season break, and then we'll be able to talk a little bit more about Star Trek at large. But next week is, as we said, lathe, but that's maybe
lathe. Latte
could be Greek, you know. It's not like Star Trek, you know, to go into Latin or Greek, so, you know, that wouldn't be surprising.
I mean, who mourns for lathe?
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
And I'm Grace Moore.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.